Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 224. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Happy Friday.
Graham Thickens.
That didn't sound too happy.
It didn't sound happy.
I'm going to try to be a little happier. Hello.
Yeah, happy Friday.
Yeah. And Graham Thickens.
Yeah, hello.
And Mr. Phil Wilson.
Woot woot! Have you guys seen that Geico commercial with the camel wandering through the office? Come on, what day is it? What day is it? Come on, Ellen, tell us what day it is. What day is it?
Oh, how funny.
It's Wednesday. Oh, it's hump day. Woot woot!
Anyway. Yep.
So and you are Steve Borsch.
I am. Didn't I say that?
I think you did, yeah.
Oh God!
It's been one of those mornings. It's been one of those mornings, isn't it?
I've been having technical difficulties.
So yes.
Yeah. Sorry. So I was unable to make Mini Demo. I had to crap out a Mini Demo because we're doing my dad's estate sale this weekend, and so we had to scramble and do some stuff yesterday and last night. But you guys, who went to Mini Demo?
Yeah. I know that Graham was there the whole time. I don't think he ever saw a demo. I was. Yeah. I got there late, so I caught the tail end of one demo. But I can tell you, it was a good crowd. It was a little warm in the place, as any kind of summer event would be, and especially when we're having 90 degree evenings.
Yeah.
But well attended, as always. A lot of good energy, a lot of good vibe. A lot of the same people that you would expect to see at Mini Demo. Did you meet a lot of new people, Graham?
Probably not. But it sure was all pretty much all the regulars. I heard 600-ish were registered.
Yeah, I saw some of the photos, and my God, looked packed.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was, and plenty hot when you get that many people crammed into a old concrete brick square like that. My God, I knew the air conditioning system couldn't keep up with that, but we survived somehow. But yeah, I was there. I think I finally bailed about 8:45 and had a lot of great conversations, ran into several people that I hadn't seen in a while, and I went there as always for the conversations, not for the demos. I see those in other places, and I can't hear a damn thing in that big room anyway. The acoustics are really not good in there.
No, that's too bad, because I've heard that too. I've been to several things there, and a good audio engineer balances the audio so it cancels out the echo.
I didn't have that much of a problem here.
Didn't you?
No, not at all.
Well, maybe it's gotten better, but maybe it depends on how close you are to the speakers, too. I don't know.
Yeah, hopefully the we'll be posting the video for the event soon. They live streamed it, so I'm sure that there'll be a video on their YouTube channel. At the Mini Stars channel. Let me see if I can grab that. I'll put that link in the show notes for everybody.
Good. Yeah.
How does that sound? Okay. So anyway, and then Graham, did you do the other event, which was the Rat Racer prototype exhibition? You had talked about going to
Rat. No, I couldn't. I couldn't make it.
Rot. Sorry.
Yeah, is that what it's called? Yeah. I couldn't make it to that. I had three events over 2 days just as I was coming off that god-awful bug I caught. So I had enough other events. There was a Life Science Alley event yesterday morning for healthcare startups. And then, of course, on Thursday, that was pretty well taken up with the Magna 360 Salesforce event.
That's right. And, we probably should mention that. That was a great event. It's always good to hear Jeremiah Yao Yang. Zhao Yang.
Yeah, his Twitter handle is Zhao Yang.
Zhao Yang. Yeah, yeah.
But last name Ao Yang. Yeah,
yeah, it was a a nice little takeaway from there as well. They put the whole presentation in a nice little booklet for us. So.
Oh yeah, his talk on the collaborative economy. This is a big deal, long term trend that's got legs. You know, and. I thought his talk was excellent. I mean, the way it was delivered, the quality of the content, the slides, and then we've got the link to for people to download the whole thing, the whole report from the Altimeter Group on the collaborative economy. It's very, very much worth reading. So, yeah, that was a great event with breakouts from companies like Marketo, Marketing Automation, Hotness, and of course Salesforce was all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter Coffey, who's like a senior VP of evangelism or something, gave a keynote as well that was quite good. I thought his greatest point was it's no longer enough to satisfy your customers. You know, if you think you're doing well because you're satisfying your customers, he said, that just causes you to become invisible. You have to delight your customers. And it's like every employee in the frickin' company has got to delight your customers or you're running behind, Jack.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but I think the reality of that is going to be pretty hard to attain. But because we've seen what it's been like, and I brought that point up in the Q&A is, how do you scale this to cover so many people? Because when you talk about, we saw it in social media when you started listening to and trying to respond to customers in the social media space, a lot of companies approached it as, hey, this is a free and cheap thing to do, when it turned out to be a very expensive and a very almost scientific thing that had to be taken care of. And now, a lot of companies had the hard time of actually responding to customers in social. Now you want to collaborate them where there's supposed to be more, collaborate with them. There's going to be even more give and take. That's going to be tough to scale. So.
Well, yeah, but if you ask Peter, you know what he'd tell you? It's easy. Just buy our products.
Yeah, well, there you go. There's that, yeah.
Well, I mean, let's face it. It was a big commercial from Salesforce.
And I have a real hard time with the term automated marketing. But
really, marketing automation. Oh, it's a hot space with a lot of players, and Marketo being one of the certainly up and comers that just went IPO. And it's happening. It's happening everywhere.
Well, Tim, do you have any customers, any of your larger clients that are using Salesforce, even at the entry level?
Yeah, I actually have some of the smaller customers, a winery in Napa Valley that uses Salesforce as their CRM.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I think the platform definitely is a great help, but ultimately it comes down to putting people in touch with people. If you want to truly be collaborative, you can't put companies in touch with people. I mean, you have to have those people within the companies working together, and that's where it becomes difficult. That's where it becomes, who are those people? What kind of power do they have to actually act on what they're receiving? Are they just a mouthpiece? Are they just sort of the front line, and they're not really talking to those that can affect change. Yeah, it's just going to be interesting to see how it all pans out. But I don't disagree that it is out there, that the whole concept of this collaborative workspace and this whole collaborative movement is underway.
Yep.
But you've got so many touch points today, that you have to coordinate, and that's what something like a CRM, Salesforce CRM kind of thing is good to bring in the stuff that's coming from mobile, from the web, from social, from, phone, one-on-one meetings, that kind of thing. All that stuff gets put into one place and then it can be shared.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You get a much better view of the customer than if you aggregate that stuff separately.
Well, it is interesting because you think about the collaboration that has to go on within a company, and the larger the company, the harder it is to collaborate. You know, it's harder to manage by committee. You know, now imagine that taken, not just inside the walls of your company, but outside the walls of your company. It's like, you would also have to focus diligently on your mission and your goal and your strategy rather than not get sidetracked by, a lot of different outside input.
Yep. Yeah. And that's, of course, what Salesforce is pushing with partnerships. I mean, it isn't just inside the four walls of a company by any means. It's all your, strategic partners of whatever type, but that's why these other, technologies like Marketo being one are integrated with Salesforce and, Salesforce can't do it alone, so they're doing it, with others. Mm-hmm. And these folks that do integration of Salesforce and other platforms, like Magna 360 with their Reside acquisition, are becoming major players in this space. And of course, Scott Litman gave a great pitch about what they do and how much of a major integrator they are now in that Salesforce integration space. Mm-hmm. I was impressed with that. Weren't you, Phil, with Scott's talk? I mean, go ahead.
No, I think the whole event was really well put together. It's a little crowded in there, but it was well put together, and I think they did a great job. And you get that bit of insight from Jeremiah, but there was, like you said, there was a lot of sales going on there, a lot of pitching for a lot of different companies, but that's what it was all about. And lunch was good, and we learned some things. And we know and can rest assured that there are plenty of tools out there to help you accomplish your goals of a collaborative sort of campaign or a collaborative focus.
Well, I have issues a little bit with the companies that do something other than, hey, just send us your ideas, or just here's a feedback box, throw your stuff in here. Because the one issue is how many companies would you guys sign up with and start to participate in a threaded discussion group or engage about product development or, any of that stuff? I mean, you got to be pretty doggone motivated to want to do that.
Yeah.
People want to rant and bitch and ask for help and, those sorts of things. But in terms of actual engagement to help you set the course for the future is kind of slim to none in my view. I have yet to see really any successes grow out of that.
Well, ultimately, to get to that level of wanting to collaborate with a company, you have to be a big fan of that company, because you're not going to collaborate with a product or a company that you don't like. Because if you get into that discussion pool, you're going to be the voice of dissent, and you're not going to be able to move things along. And they're not going to want you anyway. But how many hours are there in a day that you have to worry about collaborating on your own life with your own family, with your own business, with your own, your reality? And I'm going to help, sell more baking soda.
If we only had some media to consume, like audio and video.
Yeah,
and,
just there's not enough out there.
We have to wait for the newspaper to show up.
I know.
And
sometimes the telegraph wires are down and we just don't hear anything.
Oh, God.
But, Tim, you had done a nice piece in on Minovate.com about Buzz 360, this new startup. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it looks like an interesting startup, and it's one that our buddy Graham will have to tell us a little bit more about
since he's
working directly with them.
Oh, yeah.
After he gets all of his disclaimers out of the way, but the way to, to help large businesses and small businesses kind of knit together. It's a marketing platform. Why don't you give us all the background?
Sure. It's marketing automation in a way, but it's for small business. So again, it's an automation tool to enable companies to do all the things you do in marketing that they would never have time to do, you know. So, but instead of marketing it directly to small businesses, which is obviously a huge, huge marketplace that, you know, startups can't afford to address the broad small business market. I think there's something like 5.7 million businesses of under 20 that employ under 20 employees in the United States. It might even be a bigger number than that. But what this startup is doing, these very smart founders who have done a company before and sold it to SAP, so they know what they're doing, they decided the way to do this is to come up with a white label version of this technology that they can license to larger firms that depend on small businesses or market through them, you know, like media organizations, media newspaper organizations, franchisers, manufacturers, associations. And so what they've come up with is a brandable platform that these firms can put into place for their small business network to really help them with their marketing without doing a whole lot. In other words, it's a win for the big company, and it helps the small firms, their franchisees, for example, do marketing a lot more effectively. Now, yeah, those small firms can go out and buy Constant Contact or Exact Target or any number of tools.
But that's just one piece.
Well, exactly. Yeah, that's the least of it, you know. But and how many social media tools can they go buy? I mean, you know, they could spend weeks just looking at all the possibilities, you know. So these two founders, Lisa and Klaus Schniegens, who I met through Rick Brimacombe's Club Entrepreneur, I was blown away by these people about, you know, first of all, that they had invested so much of their own money from their previous successful sale of a software company called Praxis Software Solutions, mm-hmm. which was e-commerce for small business. They sold that to SAP in 2006, stayed on with SAP America, which has an office here in the Twin Cities, stayed on with them for a couple of years, then went off and came up with this concept, tested it with a small business site called Referral Buzz, focused in the home renovation business, which they knew something about because they discovered how painful it was to try and find reliable contractors and so forth. And so they decided, we can help these small business contractors a lot. And so they built up Referral Buzz to kind of as a test bed, really, to some 100 customers or more now, and even signed on big companies like Bachmann's and people like that. And they proved that it works. And then they decided, okay, now it's time for our move to take this big. And that's what they're doing now. And so they've put their money where their mouth is, and they're selling customers already. They already landed a media organization in one of our favorite adjoining states that to the south that we can talk about in a couple of weeks when they can start reporting on what kind of results they're getting at this media newspaper organization down there. So it kind of came out of nowhere. You know, they're not widely known, but they're very credible startup founders with a great concept.
Yeah, that's great.
Looks like Star Tribune had a nice article on this new website for real estate agents. We talked about real estate apps last week a little bit. So this 400 Doors organization looks kind of interesting.
It's a space that continues to grow really fairly quickly. And I'm surprised, but also it's pretty clear that there's not a lot of apps or even companies that are sort of covering everything. So there's lots of opportunities to get into the real estate space. Do you guys know any of these guys?
Yeah.
I didn't even see the article. When did it appear?
On the 13th.
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that one.
So it looks like Bill Pauling is his name. Was one of the folks, but you know, it's interesting as I look at it. They're based in at Cocoa, by the way. And what's interesting is you know, when you think about this concept of, it's really kind of a social network for real estate agents. And you think about, you know, do real estate agents really share as much as they really, you know, most sellers are not interested as much in sharing, you know, really the hot leads. They want to move the bad stuff, but you know, the hot leads are always tougher to get.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they I think they want to engage other realtors so that they can sell their stuff.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, what they want to do is there's lots of networking that goes on within the firms, like within an Edina Realty, for example, but between the firms, there's not.
Right.
There's a little bit of contact here and there at maybe, you know, you're showing a house from another realtor or whatever, and there's a little informal. But then what they're trying to do through the social network is to try to promote these, you know, realtors from other offices to kind of get together and to share the leads, which is really important right now since the supply of housing is so tight, at least here in the Twin Cities.
Right. Well, and as evidenced by how fast houses are selling, including my dad's, which we had three offers and it was gone in a day and a half.
Wow.
There's not a lot of supply. Yeah, we sold it for more than we were asking. So
that was
great.
We were talking about just how fast the market has turned into a seller's market. It was like like that.
Oh, yeah.
Just like that.
Well, but it's also because, you know, a lot of people are still upside down in their houses.
Yeah.
You know, they bought them in you know, 2007 or even 2006 for 20% more than what the market will bear right now. So
I was talking to a woman at that Magnet 360 event the other day, and they were building a new house, and she was lamenting their you know, trying to lock in an interest rate. And she says, you know, we're at 4.2 right now. We haven't locked in yet. I'm thinking to myself, you know, I remember when 4.2 used to be low. That was low. It's like you're complaining that I can't get anything better than 4.2. I remember the first house I bought was something like 11%. It was
exactly.
So
well, and now credit card debt is you know, if you miss a payment, I think it's what is in the low 20s.
Yeah, something
and,
like
you know,
that.
That used to be Lenny the Kneecapper territory.
You're right.
Yeah. Be like, hey, you need some money. Hey, you know, it's 22% interest. You know,
yeah.
So now, oh, man.
It was there was a nice piece from Kathy Grayson on the former Best Buy exec.
Julie Gilbert.
Julie Gilbert.
Yeah.
That was a really nice piece. And, you know, Julie was the one that was responsible for Wolf. Over at Best Buy, which is Women's Leadership Forum. I remember that getting quite a bit of buzz. Are they still doing that, guys? Do you guys know? Is it still
in
place?
The answer is yes. And in fact, my daughter has been encouraged to join it at Best Buy. And I was actually in, this was 3 years ago, I was actually in a group, Heartland Circle, and they have thought leaders come in and talk. And Julie was and her colleague were one of the thought leaders that came in and spoke, and she told her entire story. And it was unbelievably moving about how this woman has basically launched herself out of South Dakota in not great circumstance and has really, she's just a driver and a mover. So it comes as no surprise that she's doing really well with, you know, Precious Status and winning the Minnesota Cup and all of that. And, really strong executive.
Just a quick little Precious Status is a site that's or is a system that's designed to keep track of loved ones and you know, those that are
while they're in,
needed, yeah,
while they're being cared for,
yeah, needing, yeah, yeah, needing more care. So, mm-hmm. It's an interesting deal.
Can it also be applied to daycare, children's?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And by the way, she won overall Minnesota Cup last year, was it? I believe.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Right. It wasn't just the high tech category.
Yeah, the grand.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. So really, really well put together. I mean, it was a real strong offering. And then a little bit, some other Best Buy news. Tim, did you put this in? Best Buy's unlikely return from the dead.
Yeah, the thing in time online. Yeah, it was an interesting rundown of sort of what they've done over the past year.
Yep.
Against really all the odds and against all of the analysts' predictions, and they've been able to turn it around, and you know their stock is really on a roll right now.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't hurt having Dick Schultz basically give a thumbs up to Hubert Joly as well.
Well, he's done a great job.
And
he's
his strategy. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
And we get to say Hubert Joly a lot.
Many times.
And if you're really into French, the H is silent. So it's Hubert.
It's Hubert. Yes. That's what Hubert Joly.
Oui, oui.
No, remember, my background's Germanic.
Ah. So. There you go.
There's a little friction there between
Hubert Joly.
But you don't like the French? Come on.
No.
You know
what?
Steve calls him Hubert Joly.
Yeah.
You know what's amazing to me though is honest to God, when you look at Germany and you look at France and you literally go across the border and obviously you're in a different country. That's what, whenever I'm amazed by stuff, people look at me and go, "Well, you know you're in a different country." It's like, "Yeah, I know I'm in a different country, but imagine growing up and, you know, half a mile away, people are speaking a language that's dramatically different than yours. And I don't know. I'm going off on a tangent. I'm sorry.
Well, have you been to Alsace or to Belgium?
Have I been there?
Yeah. I mean, those are really weird places because they're disputed territories. Yeah. So, you know, everyone there speaks like five different languages.
Yep.
Well, we also couldn't let Best Buy slide by without including a little link to an Onion story in the show notes. So
what makes that funny? I mean, you found that one, Phil. But what makes it funny is that we've all been to Best Buy and had that
exact experience.
Exact experience.
I know.
The story is entitled "Best Buy Employee Going to Tell You What He Has at Home." I have this at home.
I've got this Netgear dual band router for years, and honestly, I haven't had a single issue with it.
Yeah,
it's all anecdotal. Oh God, it was so funny. I liked it.
Yep.
Yeah, you come in to buy something, and they start telling you what they have, and it's
right.
I don't care what you have, dude. Just, oh man, yeah, crazy.
Julio has noted some more iPhone accessories. This guy is nuts for iPhone accessories.
Well, not only that, but how the hell does he hear about everything?
They call him.
Do they? Oh my God. Yeah. The guy is just, he's just a machine with how he puts out this stuff about, you know, some company and they're making, you know, cases for the iPad and he finds all of this stuff. It's just amazing.
I remember he's a reporter, Steve.
That's what he does.
Why, thanks, Tim.
Yeah, but
When he was raving about that knitted case, I think, is one time for his iPhone. So he's
okay. Yeah. Well, we can't give him everything. So that was a little bit out there, but
yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I think he's showcasing a couple of the Minnesota companies that are doing iPhone accessories. So you might want to check that out and see what Julio's resting his iPhone on today.
Right. Right.
Well, and he's on vacation now for 3 weeks. So, but I suspect he may be looking at more stuff now, you know, because he's isn't under pressure to be filing a lot of stories. So,
well, he usually writes books on his vacation. I know he did. You know, he did Twitter for business. He did the iPad for business. What do you suppose he's doing now?
Well, he didn't tell me he was working on a book. He says he's going to be spending. Well, he did say he's going to be spending a lot of time on his laptop on the porch with his wife and drinking beer. So it's a staycation.
He's taking Instagram photos.
Maybe it's beer for business then.
Maybe. Hey.
Yeah, if you follow Julio on Twitter or on Facebook, it's like the guy is just a machine with Instagram as well.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep. So we'll have to watch him over vacation here and maybe get him on.
Yep.
Because he's up for that. You know, he says, yeah, he's not going out of town. He says even if he is, he can get on. So.
Yeah. Yep.
That'll be fun.
Now I'm just gonna throw something out there, and I don't know if we're prepared yet, but I'll throw it out there, and Steve can fix it in post if not. Is it time for Steve's security tip of the week?
No.
Steve's very insecure today.
Well, no, I can't insert it because I don't know where we are in the show.
Oh, okay.
Because of my technical difficulties today, which I still can't figure out because it was working last night. That's why I always set the show up the night before.
Right.
So I can test everything, make sure all the gears work, and I don't have to think about it in the morning.
All right.
But, you know, I don't have a security tip of the week. I'm sorry.
I've got one, though.
Tim, go for
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it lock your front door? What is it?
No, we've been on the move since we're moving. And so I've been working out of a lot of Starbucks and libraries and lobbies of hotels like I'm doing now. And one of the things that you worry about is when you're on any of these open networks is security, obviously. Because
man in the middle attacks.
Yep. The old man in the middle attack, right? So I've been using Hotspot Shield for years, and it's this goofy VPN service. And I was using it at a Starbucks, and you know, it really impacts your performance a lot.
Yep.
So I decided to look at VPNs again, and LogMeIn has Hamachi, which I used Hamachi when it was still open source. I think it still is technically open source, but what they've done is
it's commercial open source, so it still is, but they're offering it as a commercial product too, so it has more features on the commercial side and support and everything.
Right. So they built that into their whole LogMeIn infrastructure, and it's really well knit. And I use LogMeIn anyway to get to mobile computers to either
support people
remotely, or you know, I'll be at the coffee shop and I'll need to get a file back on my home computer. And so it made sense to try it out again, and it works great. I mean, it doesn't appear to have any of performance kits that I had when I was using Hotspot Shield. And you can set up your own VPN. I think you've got 5 clients that you can set for free. And so that's plenty for me. And it just works great, and I feel better, you know, that I'm fully secure.
Do they have an iOS yet?
I don't know. You'll have to go look at the their site.
You probably don't have access to this unless you're paying for LogMeIn, right? One of their paid.
No, I don't pay for LogMeIn. I get free. I just use the free LogMeIn.
Well, how do you transfer files on the free LogMeIn?
I don't. I just keep everything in Dropbox.
Okay.
But you know, occasionally I'll need to run a program or whatever and get back to my home machine. But with LogMeIn, I can do that. And if I did like leave a file on my desktop, I could drag it right into Dropbox via the free service anyway.
I do that all the time. I love that. Yep.
But it just integrates and you get up to 5 for free, and it works great on my Mac. So I'm really happy with it. So, you know, if you're looking for a VPN service, Hamachi from LogMeIn is a good one.
Cool. Cool. Cause I've been using Hotspot Shield as well. So,
well, that's one of the reasons why I stopped using, a couple of free VPNs. And also there was one, you know, or Tor servers even, you know, most of the Tor networks are just so damn slow that, yeah, you can be anonymous everywhere, but you know, you're going to add all this overhead to your web surfing, and sometimes it gets really old.
Yep.
But yeah, that's a great tip, Tim. Well, we're going to have to do Tim's security tip of the week now.
Tim's tip of the week?
Well,
it's the security tip of the week.
Maybe I'll have one.
All right.
But another story I put in that I thought would be a good discussion point was that one from the Wall Street Journal, which is the smartphone upgrade slow as well, factor fades. And I've kind of found this true myself. As long as my phone is going to work, you know, I'm going to keep it for a lot longer than I kept my last smartphone.
Right.
You know, it's interesting you say that because my wife and two kids, all three of them have iPhone 5s. And my upgrade, I just became eligible for an upgrade in May, and I still have my 4S. And, you know, I got to tell you that it seems to just be fine. And I don't lust after the current 5. I mean, yeah, I'd like to have more screen real estate and all that, but I'm sure you guys are going through the same thing. When you look at your Android phone, you're saying, hey, you know, what do I really need? So, yeah, I could see it slowing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's only a matter of time. We're not talking about, you know, replacing $40 phones anymore. We're talking about replacing, you know, pocket computers. So
I think you look
at that whole concept of the evolution of technology, and you know, it's going to take that next big leap before you see, you know, total, you know, turnover in the smartphone market.
Well, and that's why.
Well, it's sort of like laptops. I mean, they're plenty good enough the way they are, and you really don't need one every year or two. I mean, you can use one for 2-3 years as long as it still works, you know?
Well, because the pace of performance has grown to a point where you're not, you know, your incremental changes aren't dramatic enough to get you to upgrade.
Right. So, it's just plenty good enough, and as long as it still works and runs the latest software. And that's been one of the things with Android phones is they really haven't been fully baked until about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got an Android phone that was state-of-the-art a year ago now, you probably won't need another one for 3 or 4 years unless you break it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. So what's coming up? Yes, I'm sorry.
Did you guys mention T-Mobile, Tim, and their latest stats on how many iPhones they're selling? It's something like close to 40% of all the phones they're selling now in such a short time. And their upgrade program must be having something to do with that, maybe? I don't know.
Well, no, I think there's so much pent-up demand for iPhones, and a lot of people brought their own iPhones onto T-Mobile that those people are probably upgrading to the T-Mobile band, you know, version, which allows you to use their 4G, because before you had to use just Edge.
Yep.
On the iPhone. So I think there's a lot of that going on, so it'll be interesting to see in a year if that rate still continues.
Right. So we can move our AT&T iPhones that are unlocked now to the T-Mobile without the T-Mobile platform without having to do Edge,
Well, no. I don't think that this market has the refarmed 3G that works with AT&T bands. I don't think it does. It just got LTE, which is only compatible with the iPhone 5.
Are any of you using that? You aren't, are you, Tim?
No, I have a Nexus 4, and it doesn't have LTE. Yeah. It only has HFCA Plus. So.
Yeah.
It's still plenty fast. I used it last night because the hotel network is one of these crazy things where you have to log in. So I couldn't get my Roku streaming. So I just set up a quick hotspot on my phone, and I was streaming Roku just fine. I was watching.
Interesting.
HSPA Plus is a good networking standard and is pretty fast.
Yep.
Well, one of the stories that was in our show notes to talk about that I do just want to touch on, only because I have some thoughts around it, Phil, is the XO tablet, the one laptop for child tablet, available exclusively at Walmart.
Why did you
$149?
Why did you target me on
it
that?
It wasn't
because you were going to go into the events. I thought.
Oh, sure.
I just deleted it because I thought that it wasn't as I don't know.
Well, it's not really one lap. The whole concept of one laptop for child was sort of this, you know, very much a more grand scale concept of getting laptops into the hands of children in underdeveloped countries. And
right,
it's turned into a tablet at Walmart. I'm not sure I quite understand.
Well, it is strange, but here's what I looked at. As I looked at the fact that I'll come back to that school in Taiwan, or excuse me, in Thailand, that got a hold of us about getting books, and so I pulled a bunch of books together, and then I built a little thing that I could put on a flash drive, a little website with access to all of these Project Gutenberg ebooks and audiobooks and so forth, and how the kids have access to computers and labs, but that's it. And I kept thinking, you know, it would make sense to have a tablet, so... I thought it was an interesting concept, but I don't think they're using it for the one laptop per child project.
Doesn't seem to be.
It's too expensive.
Yeah, it is.
And I would, you know, I would buy this in a heartbeat if it had that hand crank recharging thing.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay.
They should really think about sticking one of those onto this.
Yeah.
A little tablet version of the crank. That would be kind of interesting, this little nibbity crank.
Yeah, yeah. It would like come out of the side and you'd crank it. Yeah, that would be good.
Well, Didn't you just use that for everything? So.
Yep. Say, because of my technical difficulties, I have to apologize for the fact that we're going to have a short show today because we all have things we got to do. But why don't we just quickly go through the upcoming events? And so
Drupal Camp.
Camp tomorrow. It's today.
Yeah, it's today, actually. Oh, wow. It was on yesterday as well, so yep. I guess none of us made it there.
Nope.
Yep. And then Coder
Dojo. There's a bunch of new stuff, yeah. This Coder Dojo looks pretty good. It's kids, helping kids to program, so that's always good.
Yep.
And Justin Crammons over at Code 42 is very involved in that. Just loves doing that.
Oh, he is? Oh, great. Yep.
So I think that's a wonderful opportunity for kids to learn. So.
Yeah.
And what is EdJam?
EdJam, and it's like a hackathon for educators.
Got it. That's interesting.
So I put that in there just for you, Steve.
Yep.
Because you're so into the both hacking and education.
I am. How'd you know?
I just know.
You're following me around. I know that.
You've mentioned it before.
I know. I'm just... and then I found this intriguing because my brother-in-law used to office about half a hallway down from Grace Hopper. And this Grace Hopper Women in Computing, I don't know if you guys know much about Grace Hopper.
No, refresh us.
Okay, I only know it from Kung Fu.
Well,
Grace Hopper.
She was a computer. She was a computer
Grace
scientist.
Grace Hopper, time for you to leave.
That is bad.
She was a computer scientist and a real pioneer in computing, and ended up as a U.S. Navy Rear Admiral.
She was on 60 Minutes. They had an interview with her not too long ago. Actually,
She was. In a lot of ways, I'm really bugged that she has not been more lauded as a real pioneer and also somebody that is just an unbelievable role model for women, especially in technology. So I think this is kind of cool that this is going to be an event here.
Yeah.
Yep. On the second.
Yep. And then our Life Science Lean In, which we talked about with Mini Analytics.
Yeah, coming up on October 11th, all day at Optum Eden Prairie. That will be a big event with 600 or 800 people. It's coming together nicely. I'll be attending a planning lunch again today, as a matter of fact. I'll give you guys continuing updates on speakers and sponsors involved in that. There's some biggies already. Good. So,
and then Steve will be front and center at the Cybersecurity Summit.
I will be, only because, oh my God, cybersecurity is becoming high on everybody's radar screen. And I think because it's so nebulous that so many companies can jump in and be involved and bill the government tons and tons and tons of money, and you know, deliver God knows what, and of course protect us. So.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I'm not cynical.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
That will be a big event, though, with people coming from all over the place to the Minneapolis Convention Center on October 22nd, 23rd. That's a major win for Minneapolis to have a big deal convention like that.
It really is, and I think I'm going to go down there with a laptop and do a man in the middle attack for Wi-Fi. Just see how many. No,
you can do it from your Exo tablet.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Hey, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
Take care.
All right. See ya.